This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet. Together listeners, after almost 4 years of going strong, this podcast is on a well-deserved break. While we're gone, we're sharing some of the most impactful episodes we've run to date, focusing on real-world, sustainable-ish problems you face every day. Keep listening for insights and more. Hey, Good Together listeners. Today's episode is about something we talk about a lot in this podcast, but we've never really done, I would say, a more interesting deep dive from a consumption level, and that's plastics. Our world right now, I feel like, is so dominated by convenience. Plastic is all over the place. And honestly, it can feel really overwhelming when you think about the term plastic-free living or just trying to think about how to reduce plastic consumption in your life. But the good news is we have somebody on the podcast today who's going to help us work through that. So we're excited to welcome Arielle Crawford. She's a sustainability educator, also the founder and designer of Arielle, a sustainable apparel label. But Arielle's background as a professor of sustainable manufacturing at the Fashion Institute of Technology is really, really exciting. And it's going to lend an awesome lens to the problem at hand. So welcome, Arielle.
Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I wonder if you can get us started with just a brief intro about yourself, maybe about your background and kind of like what led you to tackling this problem of plastic waste.
Sure. Yeah. So my background is in fashion. I worked in conventional fashion for the majority of my career until I sort of had this epiphany about synthetics, about plastics. And I ostensibly quit the fashion industry at that point. And I went down to the jungles of South America and I was learning artisanal crafts and natural dyes and weaving. And from that point, I felt re-inspired to enter the fashion industry from a new point of view. And that's when I started my eponymous brand in 2017. And from there, that really launched a whole deep dive into sustainability and specifically around avoiding synthetics, not just from an environmental stance, although I will say that's what initially inspired me, but it really segued into this realization of the effect that plastics have on our health, on our well-being, and also on the sort of fog that they create from a consumerist point of view. I have been zero waste for about 8 years, and about 6 months into my plastic-free journey, I feel like the fog lifted on consumerism, and all of a sudden, I realized I'm not just a consumer, I'm a creator, and it really put me in this interesting place to relaunch myself and how I feel I have an impact on the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like this has just been such an interesting ride from a consumerism perspective. You're right. I think that there, up until, past pick up 5 to 10 years, people, I don't think really thought about the damaging impacts that plastic could have. I feel like, I mean, in my mind, one of the first like big consumerism movements was the whole like clean up litter, clean up litter on the side of the road or clean it out of your creek, et cetera. And I feel like that's as, children, a lot of us grew up doing that and seeing sort of the harmful impacts that like quote unquote plastic bags could be doing it. But I don't ever think it was really, communicated to us from a plastics perspective. It was always just like, don't litter, don't throw garbage out. And, we all grew up with the takeout bags, the styrofoam, et cetera. And it just really, as we learn more and more, both from just broad scale environmental impact, but also individual health concerns around microplastics and stuff. I feel like we've just literally just hit the tip of the iceberg, right?
That's how it felt to me as well, where at first I started with textiles, but I realized I was sort of chewing on the tail of the dragon. And the more I looked up, I was like, wow, this is a massive problem. And I've just found it to be, excuse my French, the best bullshit filter in the world, both from a diet perspective, you know, from a lifestyle perspective. If you cut out plastics, you cut out artificial dyes, you cut out processing, you cut out all the like crazy ingredients that are in our food that are not doing us any good, that are not actually real food. And the same is true for textiles as well. So I love this filter on my life. It has done nothing but improve my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, when we think about like the scale of the problem, I mean, I just kind of alluded to it, but I mean, the plastics are just so prevalent in every part of our daily life. And I mean, even if, and I'm going to ask you about this in a second, Ariel, but like, there's so many different places where plastics hide that you might not even be aware of. But, you know, just thinking about, so Plastic Free July is one of my favorite movements that's happened recently. And they have a ton of information on their website about the prevalence of plastics worldwide. But there was a statistic that really really stood out to me, which was like, so between 1950 and 2015, an estimated 7,800 million tons of plastics were manufactured, and half of that number was produced in the last 13 years alone. And so this is pointing to the fact that, number one, plastics have only gotten more prevalent in our life, in our lifetimes in recent years. And of this, you know, staggering amount of plastics that they're reporting on, 80% of that has just been accumulated now in landfill or in the natural environment. So 12% has been burned, which also is not a great way to get rid of it. It's a terrible way to get rid of it. And only 9% of that has been recycled. So I just, you know, that's a pretty staggering number. And it's something where, you know, from my perspective, it helps to visualize. It helps to visualize like the sheer amount of the stuff we're dealing with, right, Ariel?
Totally. It's massive. It's a hyper object, actually, much like climate change, where I think a lot of people feel intimidated to do anything about it on a personal level, because it's just so big. And it's only getting bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we all know that like, where these plastics ends up, like I just talked about, like, you know, most of it, 80% of it, like pretty much all of it ends up either in the landfill or in our natural environment. And obviously there's large environmental impacts, you know, in our oceans. You know, actually by 2050, the quantity of plastic in our oceans is expected to surpass the population of fish. And, you know, when we think about like the way plastics actually degrade in our environment, they do fragment into things, you know, little particles called microplastics, and those are everywhere. And I mean, we'll link to some of the places they've been found in show notes. But I mean, just the thing that's concerning the most to me as a parent, like they're finding evidence of, you know, infants consuming microplastics, like even just like brand new babies. So it's crazy. I don't even think we've like hit the we've hit the tip of the iceberg as far as it's concerned from a health perspective. And to Ariel's point, like when you decide to at least start to reduce the plastic in your life, there is just your world opens a little bit instead of closing. That's how I'd say it.
That's been my experience as well. I just had my first child and I went even harder on plastic free, you know, pre-fertility and, or preconception and, during pregnancy and postpartum as well. I know that it's not just the microplastics, it's also the chemicals that are inherent to plastics, like phthalates, that have a major impact on our endocrine systems, specifically our reproductive systems. And that's multi-generational, right? So if your in utero child is exposed to phthalates via plastics, flexible plastics specifically, that affects their future fertility. It also affects the future fertility of your grandchildren, because they are holding the, you know, the eggs or the sperm at the time that they're inside of you, you know, of your future grandchildren. So it's the effect is just massive. And I think people don't quite understand that it's not nuanced.
No, it's not at all. And I think, well, the other thing too is, so I have a toddler, so I was just kind of right there with you with a new one just 2 years ago. But one of the things I found to be pretty staggering when I was going about my own like early parenting journey was the amount of things that are plastic and then how difficult it actually is to find stuff that's not plastic. I mean, like when you think about bottles, like, so we, I breastfed for a little bit and then we did formula and gosh, it was really difficult for me to find like glass bottles or bottles like to feed that didn't have, you know, a bunch of plastic all over it. And there's so many examples of this. And if you, even if you don't have a child, like if you're looking to, you know, maybe switch out some snacks, you know, you're going to be trying to do that. And it's like, man, it really ends up being a pretty big problem. And it's something that you really don't understand until you're in the middle of it, right?
Agreed. I will say it's gotten easier since I first started 8 years ago. Sure. Because, you know, now it's a thing, it's a trend. And thank God, because you can actually search plastic free on Amazon. And it's becoming more and more accessible. You know, some of the bigger box stores are really promoting this as a filter. And I'm totally on board with that because it does need to become more and more accessible. I understand not everyone is extreme as me, and not everyone is going to, you know, say, I'm not going to use plastic anymore. And there is it's a little bit like cloth diapering. Like you don't have to be 100%. Every percent that you improve upon is less waste in the environment and better for your health. So I love the 80-20 rule when it comes to living plastic free. I think that a lot of people have more success with the 80-20 rule than, I have to be 100%, right? You have to build yourself in some leeway.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's always going to be things that we have that we purchase that have plastic around them. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit, because I think that's kind of a fun question. But I mean, so the thing that I'll say is has been the most helpful for me in my plastic reduction journey. So listeners, you know, I myself am not zero waste. I practice very much the 80-20 rule, like Ariel's mentioned. You know, there are times where I have to buy items that have plastic in them, whether it is, you know, cost or convenience or whatever. Like there are times that this happens to me. And so I probably am, you know, I would say like, I'm certainly on that journey, but am I perfect? Absolutely not. But the thing that I found to be the most impactful, and again, this comes back to a timing thing and a convenience thing, is to make your own stuff, period. Make your own stuff, like make your own, you know, make your own applesauce pouches and use reusable pouches. I've talked about those previously, but for kiddos, making your own food in general so that you're not over here, you know, getting a bunch of individually wrapped breakfast sandwiches in the morning. Like there's so many different ways, but honestly, a lot of it starts with like buying fresh ingredients and making things yourself. So that to me has been like a big eye opener, at least from like a food perspective.
Definitely. And even though it is an initial investment in education and time, I say like having a bag of flour and doing a sourdough starter will save you know, thousands of dollars a year, because you're not buying packaged pastas and breads and buns and muffins and all the things. Of course, you know, there is a learning curve there and it does take some time. But if you consider all the time that it takes to go to the grocery store and come back, instead you could just be like feeding a starter every couple of days in the fridge and, you know, making a loaf of bread every couple of days, you're saving money, you're saving time, you're certainly saving waste. And it's a lot better for you when you're eating, you know, live, real fermented foods in the case of sourdough.
Yeah. And it tastes so good. Like, we did sourdough, like baking for a long time. We need to get back into it. Like we need to wake our starter up and stuff. It's been kind of crazy. We've been traveling, but one of the things I love about using sourdough starter is actually there's so many things you can make with it. That is not just bread, like makes amazing baked goods, like really good pancakes. And I actually just saw a recipe for brownies, that looked really, really good. So I think like, that's another thing too, where you can think about like, not only are you, you know, being more eco-friendly and saving money, but it's going to taste really good too. Right.
Definitely much better, when you start eating real foods, as opposed to packaged, for sure. It's a different game.
Absolutely. And so another tip that I had on the reduction piece relating to food, but also this could be something else, is just like buying things in bulk. So my family is a huge, we love Costco. We go like almost every week. And the thing, obviously Costco has a ton of options of things just covered in plastic, and I get that, but they do also have a lot of other options, like, you know, jarred, marinara in glass jars. They have like, and huge quantities of them. We get a lot of produce from Costco, and a lot of apples actually lately, and those come in just cardboard boxes, which can be recycled. Now again, there are some things that are in plastic and I don't love it, but if we have to play the game of what's worse, is it worse for me? I mean, first of all, if I could go, it's the winter, so we don't have as many farmers markets right now. Yes, in an ideal world, I could walk out to a farmer's market, get some amazing organic produce that was grown locally close to home, and I could just put it in my own bag, no plastic, etc. But sometimes that's not feasible. So I guess then the next best option would be, yeah, go to the grocery store, grab it fresh, and don't put it in one of those plastic bags. Sometimes I can't make it out there. So when I get out to, you know, Costco, if I'm going to buy something that's wrapped in plastic, I kind of have to make those weigh those options in my head in purchasing convenience. But again, buying in bulk can be a huge saver in terms of money, but also plastic.
Yes, it can. And it's important to remember that sustainability is a gray area. There's, you know, it's not so black and white. And sometimes you do have to say, okay, well, like, what's the carbon cost of this thing? Or, you know, if I'm buying, you know, kiwis from somewhere and I live, you know, in Montana and it's December, there's a lot of questions to ask. And that's why sustainability requires a lot of critical thinking. It's really not just this, oh, I check this box and now I'm good, right? It's this thing that's constantly evolving and does require a lot of self, you know, challenging your own beliefs and critically thinking about all of these things.
Absolutely. You know, I think some other, you know, other tips that we have, we've talked about these previously, are just, you know, again, buying things in glass, like I talked about, like there are obviously we need containers for things, it's such as life. So finding things that are packaged in glass, or, you know, making sure that you're prioritizing that, I think is really important. And I'm trying to think what else. I mean, what are some other tips that you have, Ariel? Because I have a few parenting specific ones, but I wonder if there's a few others that you could share.
Around reducing plastics?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. So we're big fans of DIY in the household. We make our own toothpaste. We make our own like spice blends and stuff from the bulk section. Definitely make a lot of our food. We have chickens, and so we get our eggs from the backyard. I do butcher our chickens as well for chicken. We're not vegetarian. So I was off grid for 2 years, and I went really hard on, all our water came from the creek or from, a windmill, which we, installed and did a well, and we did solar power. And I really went into this experiment of like, how deeply can I reconnect with where our resources are coming from, hunting and growing our own food. And I still do a lot of that, although we did go back on the grid during my pregnancy because it was 105 for like 60 days in a row in Texas. Wow. And we didn't have AC out there. But so, you know, that was all really extreme, but even just like growing a few herbs, everybody can grow cilantro on their windowsill kind of thing. And it just gives you this reconnection to, oh yes, this is where my food comes from. I'm also a really big fan of find your local butcher shops. If you eat meat, instead of just buying meat from, you know, whatever your big box grocery store is, find your local purveyors, of everything. So of meat, of cheese, and finding your farmers markets.
Yeah.
And this way you can really reduce your supply chain. So for me, it's as much about transparency as it is about the packaging. Because if you go straight to the butcher shop, or even straight to a farm if you can, you can tell them, hey, can you put that whole chicken straight into my container? Or can you wrap that in butcher paper? And you start this conversation that didn't formerly exist, you know, between you and the supply chain of where you're getting your things. So the whole thing is really about, you know, plastic represents the way that we've sort of sealed ourselves off from our supply chains. And it's very problematic because plastic is literally transparent. You can see right through it. And so a lot of people literally don't even see it. And it's also ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And so we've become blinded to it. And so I think the more you sort of break that fog and reconnect to your supply chain, where your clothes come from, you know, look at the label, read the content label. It's much like reading the nutrition label of your food. What is it made out of? Where was it made? All of that is on the content label. And yet how often do people, you know, in the dressing room or online look what the contents are and where it was made? And the same goes for everything. Like the more that we can realize everything was made or grown by someone of something, the more we're going to awaken to this conundrum.
Absolutely. And I mean, that was just such a great way to think about things, because thinking about it specifically, as you just said, around the cutting off of ourselves from our local supply chains is really, really important. And you're totally right. And I also think too, like, as you start to notice plastics, you'll start to see it all over your house. You said it's very ubiquitous. And so just again, as you're going through it, like, don't forget to give yourself, you know, some grace, because it really can be difficult. And, you know, one of the questions that we had where you're like, what are some of the things in your house that you have to have that are based in plastic? I'll let Ariel answer this one first, because she's got a little bit of a experience up on me, but I'll give you some answers too.
Sure. Yeah. I really had this realization for birth, because I had a home birth, and I did specify to my midwives that I wanted to have a plastic-free birth. And at first they just laughed. They're like, oh, that's not possible. Right. And I do make concession for medical. So if I go to the dentist,
of course,
you know, medical is one place where I make concession. And that's where home birth, you know, fell as well. And I did really want to reduce plastics around that, for one, just as an experiment. And a lot of this is an experiment for me, to seeing if it can be done in, you know, our modern world. And then two, I am very uncomfortable with plastic at this point. I knew I wasn't going to be comfortable in an inflatable tub while I'm giving birth. I've become very sensitive to the material of plastic from like a comfort perspective. It just turns me off. And so I did a metal water trough for my home birth. And so that I was able to find a, you know, the plug for that, as well as a rubber hose, you know, to fill it up from the sink. But then things that I couldn't get around were like hydrogen peroxide and rubbing alcohol, and the Chucks pads that, you know, you have to give birth on. And I did choose the reusable ones instead of the disposable ones. But it's a lot of things like that, I would say, where in the medical realm, if you're a contact wearer, you're going to have a hard time finding contact solution in anything but plastic. But then I do find that, like, I got LASIK eye surgery, and then I didn't have to you know, deal with contact. There's things like that too, where you can just sort of, you know, laser hair removal instead of shaving every day, where you can kind of just like nip it in the butt. Like, okay, I'm consuming a lot in this area. Is there like some way that I can work farther up the stream, and just sort of cut it off?
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's funny. I also got, the other thing that's nice is like, sometimes when you think about convenience, it's kind of the way you look at it. You mentioned LASIK, and you know, from my perspective, I also got LASIK because I had contacts, but for me, it was much more convenience factor. However, during pregnancy, my eyesight changed a lot. So I'm actually back to contacts, and I'm gonna have to get LASIK again. But that, you know, it's one of those really fun things they don't tell you about. But when I also think about some of the trade-offs I've done in terms of plastic reduction, to me, oftentimes it's actually more convenient when I think, especially about food related things and, you know, in a cost savings perspective, it's actually ends up being a lot easier for me in the long run. But just getting started, I think, can somehow sometimes be a little daunting to people. Some things that, you know, like I said, we certainly don't have the type of plastic reduction in my house that you do, but things that I've really been pushing to reduce but still seem to be prevalent. Again, like sometimes the produce, if it's wrapped in plastic, like that can drive me a little insane. Another thing is toys. So I have a toddler. Typically for Christmas, we ask that she gets experience gifts or wood-based toys, etc. But like grandparents are going to be grandparents in a lot of instances. And so we've had a lot of plastic toys sent to our home. And, you know, sometimes we'll play with them. But regardless, we always try to like re-gift to other kids, specifically through Buy Nothing. So we're not just like saying, okay, well, we don't really love this toy. We can't really return it. So what do we do with it? Like, we're not going to be over here donating it because, you can donate it, but listeners, as you know, unless you're donating directly to the source, like not quite Goodwill, but you're donating like maybe to a children's shelter, it can be difficult to know that when you do that donation that it's actually going to get used. So I'm a big fan of using something like Buy Nothing or, yes, donating more with like a specific, resource rather than just like a catch-all like Goodwill.
Yes. Yes. And I found, we just did our first Christmas with our newborn baby and yeah. I was like, it's paid off to be a nut job all these years publicly because everybody is terrified to get us anything. And they're just like, and that works for us actually, because, I find just like being really vocal about your values. For me, there's an agenda there. It's not just about, oh, I don't want any plastic. It's about how can I raise awareness around this thing? So I tend to not keep my mission very quiet. Like if I'm in line, getting a juice or something and I brought my own jar, I don't care if I'm holding up the line a little bit. I don't mind, bringing my own container into the butcher shop and sort of, having this conversation while other people are listening. Even though it may be annoying at the time and I may be like that girl, I find that like the trigger is often the doorway. I was first triggered when I heard about the zero waste movement. I was like, oh, whatever, cool.
Yeah.
Good for you. And then I was like, wow, I was really triggered by that. And that was pretty much like how I got started. And I think that, we can never judge our own ripple effect in the world. And I do find that by being vocal, about these issues, it's just more likely that everybody's going to start to question it and not accept the default.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a great conversation. I think we've talked about, a lot of really actionable things that people can do in their everyday lives. But Ariel, I'm curious to know, as we wrap things up, I like to ask our guests the same question, which is, from where you're standing, what is exciting you the most about the ethical and sustainable lifestyle movement?
So I have since transitioned into the world of natural building. So 2 years ago, I left the fashion industry aside from teaching, which I now do remotely. And I became a natural builder. And so I now run a construction company with my husband called Texas Cobb Company. And we build sustainable homes and structures out of earthen materials. And there's been such a response to this and a real sort of zooming out of, how we think about our lives and the materials that we live in. And it's been just so awesome to see the response that this is garnering. I think gets a little bit better of a response than the plastic free movement because people are very, attached to their consumerism. But yep. I do see, that the further along that we go and the more we zoom it out and we scale it out and we say, oh, it's not just, the plastic water bottles that we drink out of. Or the straws, it's so much bigger than that. And it relates to our actual health, well-being, and happiness. And I think that, when we tie in textiles and we tie in the materials that our homes are made out of, people start to really see the big picture and get excited about it, excited about how we can build the world that we want to see.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us and your little one too. I remember those days. I remember them for sure. But listeners, we can, we'll make sure that we include links to everything we talked about in our show notes. But we really appreciate you joining us today, Ariel.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura, and good luck to everyone on their journeys of sustainability. May they never end.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.